From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, Visions of the Future with Michael St. Clair. I'm looking forward to chatting with Michael. Police and state intelligence agencies in Europe and also several countries out that way may soon be working together to secretly hack into private citizens' personal computers without their knowledge and without a warrant. According to a London Times report, the police hacking process called remote searching enables law enforcement to gather information from emails, instant messages, and web browsers, even while hundreds of miles away. Catherine Albrecht will join us in a moment as we talk about this and chips. More earthquakes are rattling Yellowstone National Park, strongest now 3.5. Yesterday, Mitch Batros on the program said really not to worry until they start getting up to the 4 level. So we'll keep our eyes on that. Several hundred quakes centered around the northern end of Yellowstone Lake have now occurred since December 26. No major damage reported. Earthquake swarms happen fairly often in Yellowstone, but scientists say it's unusual for so many earthquakes to happen over several days. Yellowstone, of course, sits atop the huge caldera, the super volcano. And also north of San Francisco, new swarms of earthquakes there as well. President-elect Barack Obama is meeting congressional leaders to discuss his plans for a multi-billion-dollar stimulus package. Reports say the package could be worth more than $800 billion, including $300 billion of tax cuts, which would be higher than had been expected. Mr. Obama said he wants a plan that will create 3 million jobs by 2011. Bad news for Chrysler. December U.S. sales plunged by more than half, and it sold 30% fewer vehicles in 2008 as consumers remained uncertain about the economy and their jobs, dwarfing the steep declines at other major automakers. Chrysler said its Monday sales drop of 53% for the month in December because of the recession and fewer fleet sales. Toyota Corp., 37% slide. Honda sales tumbled 35%. Ford, 32%. GM, Nissan, 31%. Bad month for the auto industry. Vacancy rates, as Gerald Celente said on this program many months ago, in office buildings continue to go up, now exceeding 10% in virtually every major city across the United States. And they're rising rapidly, a sign of economic distress that could lead to yet another wave of problems for the beleaguered financial sector. We've got Gerald on the line right now, founder and director of the Trends Research Institute. Gerald, I can distinctly remember the times you've been on the program and you said, George, the next problem, commercial real estate property.
It's just beginning now, George. And we saw from Christmas retail sales how bad things are in the retail sector. We're looking now at numbers that are being reported of about 150,000 stores to close in 2009. When we have all that empty retail space, the only people that are going to be filling them is nobody. There won't be any renters, and that's only in retail. We're looking also at all of the failures in the financial sector, from the closings of so many bond companies, brokerages, and banks. We're also going to have a huge surplus of commercial real estate and office buildings. So yes, indeed, we're going to see the collapse of 2009 come about from the highly leveraged real estate sector that's going to be empty of occupants and in need of renters.
I got this email from Mark in Washington, Gerald, and I wanted to read it to you because you are one of those that he is thanking. So, George, I want to do a shout-out to Coast, the reason, because the guests that you have had on, I was able to salvage my retirement investments. I have not lost 1 cent because I took their advice. Now, how about that, Gerald?
Oh, that's wonderful to hear, because that's the purpose of our work. We want to prepare people for what lies ahead so they could take proactive measures.
Gerald, as we get into 2009, it's going to be a rough first quarter. Do you see any hope, second quarter, third quarter?
No, we don't. And we're very much concerned that it's building closer and closer to President-elect Obama carrying the mantle of FDR, which we're worried about them calling a bank holiday and confiscating gold, just as FDR did immediately after he was inaugurated.
Okay, we'll keep our eyes on that. Gerald Celente, Trends Research Institute, his website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Two Democratic officials say President-elect Barack Obama has chosen former Clinton White House Chief of Staff Leon Panetta to run the CIA. Now, Panetta was a surprise pick for the post with no experience in the intelligence world. Panetta was a director of the Office of Management and Budget and a longtime congressman from California. My favorite longtime character actor, Pat Hingle, a veteran of early television dramas, westerns, and four Batman films, has died at the age of 84. Hingle died at his home in Carolina Beach, North Carolina, after a two-year battle with a blood disorder. Hingle began his acting career in the 1950s, appearing in numerous television theater shows. His first movie role was an uncredited appearance in 1954's On the Waterfront, which won 8 Academy Awards. He played the by-the-book judge opposite Clint Eastwood's vengeful marshal in 1968's Hang 'Em High and appeared as Sally Field's father in the 1979's Norma Rae. In 1989, he appeared as Gotham City's Commissioner Gordon in Tim Burton's Batman, carrying on the role through three sequels. His latest film was in Talladega Nights, The Ballad of Ricky Bobby, which was released in 2006. This is Pat Hingle's views on acting and life.
It's fearful to enter upon a career in acting because it is so damn competitive. And I've never been asked that I have a degree, what my religion was, what my sex was, anything. Just, can I do the role? So it's very democratic, too. But because it is so democratic, it's also anybody can try their hand at it, you know.
Now, some of you might not know his name, but when you see him, you'll know exactly who he is. Pat Hingle, dead at the age of 84. Apple founder and chief executive Steve Jobs, a survivor of pancreatic cancer, said that a treatable hormone imbalance is to blame for the weight loss that has prompted worries about his health. If you see pictures of Steven before and after, you would truly think something was wrong with him. As a matter of fact, during the Apple shareholders meeting, as he went on stage, you know, people were beginning to look at him as well. Jobs, 53, said in a public letter that his thinness had been a mystery even to him and his doctors until a few weeks ago, when sophisticated blood tests confirmed that he has a hormone imbalance and that it's been robbing him of proteins that his body needs to be healthy. He's going to undergo what is called a relatively simple treatment that will hopefully help him, and he claims that he will stay in charge of Apple Computer. For most people, hiccups are usually a temporary annoyance, aren't they? Did you ever get them? But for a man in England, imagine this, hiccuping for 22 months every 2 seconds. For 22 months. He can't sleep, can't eat, can't hold down food. Doctors are puzzled. They say there's no physical reason why you should be hiccuping every 2 seconds. They're going to give him, he's going to have an operation to help stop him from vomiting after eating, but they still don't know if that's going to stop his hiccups. He's 25 years old. He's a musician. He's unable now to sing or perform with his band. That's got to be horrible. Well, in a moment, Catherine Albrecht, she talks with us about something that could be horrible, police hacking into your home PCs. She's next on Coast to Coast AM. Catherine Albrecht, consumer privacy expert, founder and director of Caspian, organization which educates you about shopper surveillance as well. Going to talk with her about spy chips, of course, and also the story that broke on the London Times that state and police intelligence agencies from several countries out that way may soon be working together to secretly hack into private citizens' personal computers without their knowledge, without their consent, without a warrant, of course. Here she is, Catherine Albrecht. Hey, Catherine, welcome back.
Hey, George, can you believe what these guys are doing over in Europe? This is absolutely unreal. So you get an email, and, you know, we get these all the time, and your ISP may put a little note there like, don't open. This is a malicious attachment.
Yeah.
You know? Or click up pictures of my recent vacation, and you know it's not from anybody you know, and you know better than to click those things. Well, now the government wants to get in on the act of sending that kind of malware or spyware to hijack your computer so they can sit there remotely and read all your email, notice every or make a note or a log of every website you go onto, every one of your online searches, essentially getting into your brain, even downloading the contents of what you type into a Word document or into a letter. And it's happening right now in England as a result of a ruling or a decision by the European Union out of Brussels. So this is going to impact all of Europe.
And now, when will it impact the United States?
Well, that's the big question. And I think we're all kind of on the edge of our seats here, because the problem with this, law enforcement over in Europe and in the U.S. has had the ability to remotely get into people's computers. But the way they've been doing it in the past is, first of all, with a warrant from a court. The disturbing part about this is it doesn't require any oversight by a judge. All it requires is that any police official who believes they have a reason to investigate can just dive out there and do it. So there's no oversight by a court. And in the past, what it is required is that they actually break into the suspect's home and place something called a keylogger onto their computer. So they have to physically gain access to the home. Now, that's creepy enough, but this new system says that they can do it remotely. Here in the U.S., if they wanted to do that today, they would require a court order. But there's a lot of precedent of things coming out of England and out of Europe where, you know, in England, they've got more surveillance cameras per capita than anywhere in the world. I mean, they are the surveillance center of the known universe right now. And there's a very disturbing tendency for things that start off in England to make their way over here. Let me give you just one example.
Sure.
In London right now, they're doing something, they're testing out something called congestion pricing. And it's an idea that you would actually charge cars for driving into downtown London during very busy traffic, rush hour times of day, and you would actually have to pay to do that as a way to kind of reduce the congestion. Well, under this plan, this congestion plan, what they want to do is put a satellite tracking device on your car, and at the end of the month, people would receive a monthly or even a weekly bill with the total depending on when and where they drove. They call it satellite eye in the sky tracking, traffic tracking. Now, that sounds bad enough, but you say, well, you know, it's London. Those guys are kind of out of control over there. But then you look over here and you see that the governor of Oregon very seriously proposed last week doing the same thing to Oregonian drivers. So we do know that what starts off in England has a creepy tendency of making its way over to our shores as well.
Absolutely. And they're going to do this over there for sure, aren't they?
Well, they have the authority to do it, and I have never seen a government be granted authority to snoop around in people's private affairs.
and not take advantage of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Catherine, what's new in the world of chips?
Well, in the RFID world, we are still fighting the battle of those border crossing carts. Of course, in the states of Washington and Arizona and New York, they are making available these RFID tag driver's licenses to get across the border. Right now, it's upward of 100,000 people who are unwittingly, and I truly believe they don't understand, carrying around remotely readable RFID microchips in their wallets, pockets, purses, and backpacks that can be scanned by law enforcement officials. Or heck, even the stock guy at Walmart has access to the device that can read one of these things right through your pocket from 20 or 30 feet away. And why people would want to carry one of these things around, it's called the Enhanced Driver's License. It's part of a border crossing program to get you over the border into Canada or Mexico more easily. And it's really one of the most ridiculous and dangerous things that you can carry. So we're engaged in the battle on that. I also, though, George, because every time I come on, I've always got bad news. I want to give people a little positivity
here. Give us
here
some hope,
a little bit of hope. You'll recall the last time I was on the show, we were talking about Google. And Google has really been kind of upping the ante on its data collection in a way that I think has a lot of people a little bit disturbed. You know, their street view, where they drive by with their van and take a picture of the front of your house, has resulted in a lawsuit. They're now looking to scan all the books in the world and put them all online, which means that they could look over your shoulder and see what books you're reading if we actually get rid of text. So a lot of people are switching away from Google, and I may have given you kind of a bum steer last time, because the search engine that I sent people to as an alternative, I'm not sure I was even in love with it, but I've now been using a new one that I think is fabulous. It's called IxQuick, I-X, and then quick, like the quick brown fox, I-X-Q-U-I-C-K.com, and they do not save a record of your searches after 48 hours. It is all eliminated. So if you go on there, they for 48 hours only keep a record just for their own internal troubleshooting purposes, and then they delete it. And there's actually, they're based out of the Netherlands, there's actually a third-party auditor that confirms the fact that after 48 hours, no record whatsoever exists of your browsing habits. Fabulous website. All the same info you get from Google.com at ixquick.com.
Now, Catherine, you know, we have heard of forced, situations. For example, in Mexico, they wanted the one of the attorney generals there wanted his staff to get chips. Getting into nightclubs in Spain, chips. I got a call right before I went on vacation from someone who said a hospital in St. Louis here is forcing its employees to take the flu shots. It's just a matter of time that, you know, they're going to say, now you need to get chipped. What's going to happen there?
Well, I'm hoping that's not the case. And I was very disturbed, because this weekend I went to the local animal shelter. We're thinking of maybe adopting a pet. And right there on the door, it was like the twin signs of doom. One of them said, we microchip all animals here with the Avid microchip home again pet system. And then the other one said, these premises are under constant 24-hour video surveillance. When I went inside, I fell in love with one of their kitties who I wanted to pet, and they handed me this big two-page form and said, well, you have to fill out all this personal information before we'll even let you pet the cat. I was like, you know, I think we'll probably be getting a pet from somewhere else. Thank you very much. So right now, we know that all of the animal shelters around the country are only making animals available to people with microchips implanted in them. And you can argue with them till you're blue in the face that these things have been known to cause cancer in dogs, that they've been associated with cancer in cats, all sorts of problems. We definitely know they cause cancer in laboratory animals. And yet these people will just look at you blankly and say, that's fine, then don't adopt an animal from here. You know, there's no arguing with them. My concern, of course, is that once we kind of cross that line on the household pet and we start moving towards, you know, other things you care about, like grandma or, you know, junior. And that really is a serious concern. When you're living in a nanny state where the government says, we know better than you, and we're going to make you take this injection of a flu shot, for example, it really isn't that much of a stretch to imagine a government that says, we know better than you, and to keep you safe, or to keep some generic public well-being in mind here, which is what you get under a nanny state, we want to inject you with a microchip. I think that the public outcry after the research that we uncovered about the cancer link with the microchip online at antichips.com, people can download for free my 50-page report on that. I believe that that information needs to get into more hands. We've been doing our level best to get it out there, but people really need to understand that it's not just an issue of privacy, but it could actually be a serious issue of health to be involved in this stuff.
Catherine, I think right now we're in a lull of emotions. We've come out of the holidays. People, you know, are feeling okay, not really that bad because of that coming out of the holiday period. But I think quickly as that wears off, they're going to realize, you know, we're still in some kind of a mess here. And, you know, if you believe the stories that, holding tanks are being built in case there's a civil disturbance, you got to believe then the possibility that there are going to be chips. We got a call weeks ago during open lines from someone who said that he was, as a soldier, was guarding an area that was at a base of boxes full of millions of chips. Is that possible?
Well, I suppose theoretically it might be possible, although the big question that would come up there is how are you going to get people to do that unless it's actually, you know, at gunpoint?
And holding them down and injecting them.
Yeah, once you start going to that level of worrying, you've got really big problems in addition to the microchip to be worrying about if you've got literally millions of people being held down at gunpoint. Because I do not envision a time, even with a nuclear event or with some kind of an outbreak of a disease, where people are going to voluntarily agree to extend their arm and get a cancer-causing microchip injected into their bodies. I just don't think it's going to happen. And like I said, if it does get to that point and people are being forced to do that at gunpoint, we got way bigger problems on our hands than just microchips.
You've got several websites. What are they?
Antichips.com is where you can get all the information about the cancer link. SpyChips.com, of course, the website about our best-selling book, Spy Chips, where you can learn all about RFID. And then my radio website, because I, of course, do a daily radio show, is online at KatherineAlbrecht.com, which is now my new homepage.
All right, we're going to be back. We're going to take your phone calls with Catherine. I'll give you the numbers in just a moment, not to worry. Next hour, astrologer Michael St. Clair joins us as we talk about the future. But when we come right back, Catherine Albrecht and your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Catherine Albrecht and your phone calls, of course. Catherine, can we rule out chips being 666, sign of the beast, the Antichrist, and everything else?
No, I don't think we can. Not at all. In fact, if you want to talk about biblical prophecy, which is a topic that we've talked about in the past and I've spoken about very publicly, the notion that at some point you will have to have a number to buy and sell, that you won't be able to participate in the economy without a number. This is, of course, from the final book in the Bible, the book of Revelation, chapter 13. Go right there to the last couple of verses of chapter 13, and you'll see it talks about a time when all people, rich and poor, great and small, free and imprisoned, will have to have a mark on their right hand or their forehead without which they cannot buy or sell. And then it describes the mark and says it is the number of man or a man or the mark of his name. And that, of course, is 666. That's the number that you get. Well, the notion that you would need a number to buy and sell or participate in the economy is already here, George. I mean, you can barely do anything nowadays without a social security number or some account number or other. And we are quickly moving towards the point in history where there may be no more cash. And so your only way of even paying for something would be by presenting a numbered unit, whether that's a credit card number, whether it's a microchip implant with a unique ID number in it. At some point, that is where we're heading unless we get off this speeding train that's heading right for that brick wall. So, yeah, can we rule it out? Not at all. I'm not sure that the Mark of the Beast will be a microchip implant, but it certainly has all of the features and characteristics necessary to put that in place. And we've got all the technology in place to do it. We've got all the cash registers now set up for scanning. We've got all the cash registers set up to ubiquitously networked high-speed internet connections where they can take all of your purchases instantly on the fly and identify you and decide whether and what you can buy. We've got employees of Safeway, one of the biggest supermarkets in the country now, being offered a very Snoopy health incentive program where if you let the store watch over your shoulder what you're eating and make decisions about what you eat, you can get some discounts off your insurance if you're an employee of Safeway. You know, so how much longer before they'll say, well, unless you're a U.S. citizen or unless you're in good standing on your taxes or fill in the blank, you can't buy groceries. You know, it could happen tomorrow.
Yeah, it could. To the phones we go. Let's go to west of the Rockies. Mike in Tacoma, Washington. Hey, Mike, thanks for calling.
Hey, George, welcome back, buddy.
Thank you.
Yeah, you were missed, man.
Well, I'm here.
Okay, yeah. Hey, listen, before I get started on that, hey, this guy that you just had on there earlier?
Yeah, Gerald Celente.
I mean, you had a lot of different guys that, you know, predict stuff, but let me say this, that there's a bigger God than you and I and him will ever be, and these guys don't want to prophesy. I take that, you know, very lightly. So, as far as I'm concerned, there's a better life up the road, and it's going to be up to you and I to make that happen. But anyway, I got what I wanted to talk to. What's your name again?
That's Catherine.
Okay. I've got the license. I've got one of those licenses, and on it, what I have is, it says here, this radio frequency protection sleeve, which I have, which is on here right now, shields your enhanced driver license or identification card from unauthorized radio frequency identification, RFID readers. The RFID tag does not include any personal information, just a unique reference number. So this thing covers the that license to protect you.
Let me ask you, Mike, where did you get this license? What state are you in?
Washington State.
You're in Washington State.
Right,
I would love to talk to you after the show. And, in fact, let me put out an invitation, George, if I might, to anyone who has one of these licenses, because I'd like to do kind of a study and just sort of get people's input on this. Let me give out my email address for that. It's kma@spychips.com. So if anybody – please don't inundate me with a ton of other email. But if you have one of these licenses, put the word license in the subject bar, and I'll contact you to follow up, because I would love to talk to people and see if they fully understand what it is they're carrying. Let me ask you this, Mike. How often do you use your driver's license? How often do you have to take it out of the sleeve, or how often have you had to take it out of the sleeve?
I think he hung up, so
Let me say that one of the things that these states are doing is they're telling you that the sleeve makes you safe. It is true that the sleeve will block the transmission from your driver's license, but if you have to take it out for any reason, you're at the bank, you're at the store, or you just you've got kids crying and you just stick it back in your purse without putting it back into this little cumbersome protective sleeve, then anytime it's out of that sleeve, you are broadcasting your identity at a 30-foot radius around you. So just pulling it out, it's like being a tracking beacon for the time that you have it out before you put it back in again. And I believe that most people are probably going to ditch these cumbersome sleeves because the privacy invasion is invisible. You don't even realize it's happening. And for most people, unless they can see it, smell it, feel it, taste it, touch it, they don't believe it exists until it comes back and bites them later.
Absolutely. Charleston, South Carolina. Hi, Jack. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. This is Jack. I'm a listener since 1995, a first-time caller to you, George.
Well, thank you, Jack, for supporting us.
I wanted to ask something about driver's licenses, but I first want to say that the obvious way that people would possibly, even though they say, I will never get a chip implanted, would be, applying or renewing a driver's license, admission to a school, admission to a hospital, admission or applying for Social Security or Medicare, and, that covers about everyone. So people say that I will never get chipped, well, do that or you won't get any of those services.
Well, yeah, it's coming. And what amazes me is the people who really ought to know better, I hate to say it, but like our last caller, who really ought to know better are signing up for these programs that are not mandatory. Nobody's putting a gun to Mike's head and making him carry an RFID chip license around, and yet he's opted to do that voluntarily. So it always amazes me. It's like these pay-by-the-mile things where they want to track your car. Right now, they're all volunteers doing it, and there's literally tens of thousands of them around the world that are volunteering to put tracking devices on their car so the Big Brother government officials can study this plan. And you gotta kind of smack your forehead and go, who would volunteer? Like, I wouldn't do this even at gunpoint. They'd have to shoot me first. So why are people, without even a threat of a punishment, volunteering to do this? It just blows my mind.
What states, if any, do have RFID licenses?
Well, here's the good news. Let me reassure people out there, at least for the time being, that no one is getting an RFID tag in their driver's license who hasn't specifically asked for one today. The states that are doing it are border states with Canada and Mexico. They are specifically Washington. That's the number one. New York is number two. And now they're pushing for Vermont and Arizona and Michigan to be the next ones to participate. What you have to do, though, is instead of just signing up for a normal driver's license or renewing a license, you have to fill out a special form for a border crossing driver's license called an enhanced driver's license. You have to pay a special fee, you have to fill out a special form and actually ask for it in order to get the RFID tag in there. If you haven't done that, you can rest easy. At least as of today, there is no RFID tag in your driver's license anywhere else and under any other program.
Catherine, when I was 16, which was like 200 years ago.
Yeah, it was just last week, right?
Yeah. And bagging groceries was as my first job. I got my Social Security card. I got my number. I never thought of it. I never thought it was a sinister plot or anything. I just figured, well, I've got to get a job, and this is how they track me for taxes. And so I applied for it, obviously. And Americans had to work. Isn't that forcing us to do something we really don't want to do? Can't they then do it like they're going to do it with chips the same way?
Yeah, and you know, the driver's license or the Social Security number is so instructive in that sense, George, because you can look back in the 1930s when the Social Security number was first instituted, and there was a massive nationwide backlash against it because of the Mark of the Beast. We were a very Bible-literate nation at that time. People saw that. They said, wait a minute, we don't want the government assigning numbers to people. That's leading directly to biblical prophecy. And they objected in droves, in huge numbers. And the only way they were able to get it through despite the objections was to make it voluntary. And not only that, but to say, well, you know, we'll never use it for anything ever other than administering your Social Security benefits. And of course, we all know that turned out a couple of generations later, once all those people have died and passed on, then the next generation comes along and says, well, of course we want to use this for identification purposes. And now you've got to present your Social Security number to even get a phone line hooked up to your house or get a cell phone or get utilities. Or, you know, there's a thousand things. Enroll your kids in school. You have to present it every time you turn around. So, yeah, it's absolutely the sort of boiling the frog, the death by a thousand cuts, the kind of slow progression that once you let these things in, you know, this generation may never accept a microchip implant being used to buy and sell. But, you know, you wait 10, 20, 30, 40 years, and people, I think, won't even bat an eye.
Let's go to Los Angeles, where I'll be back on Monday. Mike, welcome to Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Mike. You are on the air with us.
How you doing, George?
Good.
I am a former Special Forces operative. We spoke some months back concerning the shipment into the United States of the microchips.
You were the one. Okay.
Yes. I was team leader of Army Special Forces Unit, which brought RFID chips in in a C-17, the primary containers held 20,000 apiece. There was a secondary container above that that had five of the 20,000 in them, so in packages of hundreds, 100,000 each. And on that C-17, there must have been, God, 300 of these secondary packages. I believe it was to shield the radio waves. Now,
all right, couple of questions for you real quick. Where were these shipments coming in from?
They were coming in from Brussels, Belgium,
They
were loaded. Yeah.
And did you get a chance to actually see the contents of the boxes, or were you just shipping boxes?
No, we were security for the shipment.
And how did you know what was in the shipment?
I was the leader. I was the.
I mean, did you crack open? Did you get out a crowbar?
No,
and crack
I
the
had
boxes?
The I had the manifest, and it didn't have a total amount, but the manifest was from our embarkation in Brussels to our disembarkation at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas.
And what did it
my knowledge,
describe them as?
This was in April of 2003.
Okay.
When the shipment occurred, we offloaded and I transferred responsibility of the contents to the Department of Energy, which had representatives, and I'm sure you know this, a lot of Special Forces operatives go over to DOE to guard the shipments of nukes.
Mm-hmm.
And I transferred responsibility to the guy in charge of the DOE detachment at Fort Leavenworth.
Mike, what did the manifest say specifically about the chips? How did it describe
shielded,
these things?
Shielded radio something centric or something like that. Shielded radio centric, like I said, I don't remember the exact term, devices.
But
20,000 per
about
primary container.
Implanting. Here's the only reason I'm wondering, because the military right around that time was putting in requisitions because they put out a mandate that all of their suppliers had to put radio frequency chips on shipments, meaning that if you're shipping a box of toothbrushes over to the war theater
right.
in Iraq, it's got to have a microchip on it. So was there anything that led you to believe that these were implantable as opposed to just microchips?
That's what I'm getting to. At that particular time, I believe it was from 2002, all Special Forces operatives, this was a DOD order, all Special Forces operatives, guys in the field, be they Green Beret, SEALs, all inner service, this was a DOD order. If you were going into the field as a Special Forces operative, you had a variation of this injected into your body so that they could keep track of you.
Did you
and
get one injected in you?
No, and that was what I was getting ready to tell you next. I got out in 2003, and I went to, as soon as I got out, I went to Dominican convent. I am a Dominican friar. I'm a priest. And the reason that I took perpetual orders in my order, became a priest, is because of the demonic activity that I personally witnessed within the Special Forces community. These people are chosen from some higher force to be in there. These people kill without remorse. They have no guilt whatsoever. And since I was made a priest in 06, and since then I have become particularly adept at exorcisms. And going back to my interaction with my fellow Special Forces teammates, let me tell you, there's a lot of demonic aura to Special Forces operatives, and this is all branches.
You two need to keep in touch, Catherine.
Yeah, I'd very much like to talk to you offline.
Give me your email again.
Yeah, after the program. And again, let me give out my email to anybody who has one of those driver's licenses, too, because I'd love to talk to you and get your thoughts on this. It's KMA, KM like Mary A, at spychips.com. If you can't remember that, of course, on Coast to Coast AM's website, I'm linked right there on the homepage right now. That'll take you to the KatherineAlbrecht.com website where you can find all my contact info.
Mike, be safe. You've got way too much information. Let's go to Winnipeg, Canada. Tim, you're on the line with us. Hi, Tim.
Hi there, George. Hi, hey. Catherine.
Hi, Tim.
Hi. My question was, I was wondering if it's possible that the spy chips could be injectable via nanorobots through the flu shot, maybe by the government using an engineered plague to
Good
force
point.
The flu shot on everyone.
Well,
and we won't even know that it's happening to us.
Great question, but here's the good news. Here's the good news, at least with current technology and even the technology that's on the horizon and in the laboratories. The thing about RFID or radio frequency transmissions, these microchips require an antenna that's pretty sizable to get any kind of a read range. So while it is true that there are tiny microchips that are the size that are small enough to fit into a hypodermic needle, they don't have antennas on them with any kind of read range. So even if you injected one into somebody, you could not read it. Even if you got right up against their body with the reader, you still couldn't read it because they have to have an antenna to transmit. These ones in your driver's licenses actually are the antenna runs all the way around the edge of the driver's license. So this thing is, you know, like 3 inches wide in order to get that 20 or 30 foot read range. And last time I checked, you couldn't inject a 3-inch wide thing into a person. Now, the microchip implants, the Vera chip that we talk about at antichips.com, that is a smaller device, but it's still about as big as a Tic Tac. It's not tiny, and you couldn't put it in somebody by mistake or, you know, without their knowledge because it would hurt. They have to give you an anesthetic. It's big. It leaves a lump. It bleeds. You know, it's kind of a big deal to put one of those in somebody. And even then, you only get about 12 inches of read range, so you can't track somebody from a satellite, you can't even track them from across a room with one of those implants. So it's more like it makes you barcode scannable. It's more, you know, you run a reader near the person, you get a number out, but it does not make them trackable unless you put a reader like in the doorways they pass through.
I'm not doubting your ability to stay on top of the latest technology, but what if there was some black ops program and they've developed this really little nanotechnology chip that you're not aware of?
Well, it would be, just given the laws of physics, it would be virtually impossible to do that for tracking purposes with any kind of read range. You might be able to do it for other purposes, and, you know, you could read some Michael Crichton novels and get some creepy ideas of how. But as far as tracking purposes, at least using currently known radio frequency technology and the physics that we're aware of today, you do have to have an antenna to be able to use RFID to transmit. So that's kind of the good news. I would tell people that's probably not a concern, at least not today.
Catherine,
it's far more likely that they'll do it through, you know, something like a driver's license or a tag in the sole of your shoe.
Well, we shall see. The future is right on our hands, aren't they, Catherine?
Yeah,
right,
I'm telling you. Well, I do a daily radio show on all of these topics. If I could put in a plug, you can find it at KatherineAlbrecht.com. I broadcast Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern time, so I'm in no way in competition with you,
yeah,
George.
Don't you compete with me, Catherine.
You better believe it. So KatherineAlbrecht.com, and you can find the show at GCNLive.com.
All right, thanks, Catherine. In a moment, we'll be back with astrologer Michael St. Clair, Visions of the Future.